This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Michael, every time I see Bruce Willis, I tell him how much I love Hudson Hawk.
And what does
so
he say?
He says, thank you, and it's in profit now.
Oh, good. Yeah. He likes to say that. Bruce has always liked to say that because the movie was so, God, I mean, that movie was so hated when it came out. Oh, good. Thank you. I get it now fairly regularly from people, mostly from people on movie crews who come up to me and say, you directed Hudson Hawk? And I go, you know, yes, yes, yes. And they say, oh, I love that movie. But, hi.
Hi there. So romantic comedies are a very common formula in Hollywood. What do you think sets this one apart, and why were you attracted to such a female-centric story?
Well, it certainly is a very female-centric story, and it is, I think, two things set it apart for me, two or three things. First of all, in addition to being a fairly conventional romantic comedy, it's also a mother-daughter story, and I think the mother-daughter story has equal weight with the romance and feeds the romance and makes for a much different balance than you get in most romantic comedies. So I was immediately drawn to that. And I felt that that was the strength of the idea of the movie and the strength of the characters that were written. The other thing that appealed to me was the idea of working with Diane, who was, you know, terrific and brings something to it that helps quite a bit. And to work with her in finding the balance between, you know, a good, strong emotional story, mother-daughter emotional story, and some romantic comedy that also dealt with a character who was older than your typical center of a romantic comedy. And, you know, so I guess I'll back up and say the mother-daughter story was part of it, the strength of the romantic comedy itself in the conventional way, and also the fact that in addition to the Mandy Moore, Gabriel Mock, Tom Scott story, there was the Diane Keaton and Stephen Collins story, which balanced that out. So, you know, I'll have to tell you, when I first read the script, I thought, a woman should direct this movie. It's very much a woman's movie. It's very much about how women relate to one another. It's about mothers and daughters and girls. And at first I thought, I'm probably not the guy to do this. But
what changed your mind then?
Well, I had a really good meeting with Jesse Nelson, who is the producer. And we talked about it. And, you know, I've also always felt as a director that in my work, I've done movies that are you know, sophomorically masculine. I've done movies that have mostly feminine characters and elements, and I think that both Heathers and Truth About Cats and Dogs are, in their own weird ways, they're different ends of the girl movie spectrum, but they're very much centered around the female characters. And I liked those movies, and I liked working with good actresses. I really like getting inside the heads of female characters. I think I can do that well, and I enjoy it. And so, you know, Jesse and I talked, and I thought about what this movie was about and what it had to offer and where I could take it, and it got me very interested.
Comedies like this always have great DVDs with lots of extras. I'm wondering what sort of extra stuff that we haven't seen yet might we look forward to?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, I'll have to think about that. We did a lot of physical stuff with Diane that was really funny and really good, but I found as the movie was cut together that you can only take so much of that, because at a certain point it starts to throw the balance off from the more emotional elements. And this isn't a movie that is, you know, flat out kind of silly physical comedy, but there are some really good bits that Diane did that either got trimmed way down or taken out because I felt that they didn't really help the balance of the emotional elements of the movie, which are ultimately as important as any comedy. So maybe that.
I wanted to know, how did the cast come together on this film? You know, who was the first one involved? How involved were you in the casting of the film?
Well, it's interesting because directors, you can be very involved. You're always involved in the casting of the range of parts in the movie, but sometimes you get involved in the film and there's already, you know, the stars are already there, and you read the script and you say, oh, okay, I can do this movie with these people, that's fine. In this case, the script was brought to me first with the idea that Diane Keaton was interested and might do the film. And so I read the script with her in mind, and that was helpful. that, you know, I felt like, okay, good, this is a great role for Diane. If she wants to do this, there's a lot she can do with it, and it would be fun to work it out with her. But she was not fully and absolutely committed to the film. She was sort of loosely attached. So when I said I was interested in doing it, after meeting with Jesse, I sat down with Diane, whom I knew a little bit, but not very well, and we had a really long, good conversation in which she basically read me page upon page of notes, which really impressed me, actually. I thought it was great. You know, this was a movie that she hadn't agreed to do yet, but she was taking it seriously enough to look at it and say, I like this, I don't like that, I don't understand this, how would we do that? And so I felt at the end of that meeting, I thought either she will not want to work with me and I can walk away, or she'll, you know, not want to do the movie and I'll have to decide whether I want to do it with somebody else, or we'll move ahead. And pretty much we moved ahead. So she was the first one attached, which was good. It made it easier to think about, you know, who we could cast around her. The most interesting choice really was that in the very original conception of the movie, the idea was that Millie, the daughter, was actually the eldest daughter. And there was a possibility to take this movie and have it be about a single mother of three daughters, the eldest of whom had not ever gotten her life together. And that makes a lot of sense, but there are not very many actresses that can pull that off and whom I think you'd really want to see involved in a romance and an issue, you know, a set of issues with her mother. You know, I don't think there are many 40-year-old actresses you want to see that with. And so we looked around and we thought about that, and as we went through the casting process of thinking about who could be in the movie, we also, I think Jesse and I both decided, well, we should look younger as well, because the movie would work quite well with it being the youngest daughter. And Mandy Moore came in to read, and I said, okay, you know, sure, I think she's good. I'd always liked what I'd seen of her. I wasn't all that familiar with her work. And I'd seen Saved, and I thought she was terrific in that. And I'd seen her sing on TV, and I knew that, you know, my kids knew who she was. And I said, let's see what she does. And she came in, and she gave a really, really good reading. And that, to me, it's a very gratifying thing as a director when you sit in a room and an actress comes in or an actor comes in and does the role, does, you know, the scenes that you have them read, and you realize, oh, this person can inhabit this role and do something great with it. So Mandy was the second person to be cast. And then we went from there, went through it all. But, you know, readings, we read everybody or met with everybody, and that was that.
Did you have people read together?
I don't think we did. I you know, sometimes you do that. I think we felt that Mandy's reading was so strong, it was so clear what she could do with the character, that I talked to Diane about it. I said, Mandy Moore came in and read. She was really good. Do you know her work? Are you interested? And she did know Mandy's work, and she was interested, and she felt comfortable with that. So, you know, I think maybe at one point we thought, should we bring people in the room together? But we didn't. And the guys, though, I felt so strongly that those two guys were the best people to play those roles of people that we saw, that there was no question. It wasn't like, oh, is the chemistry going to work? It seemed like it was pretty clear it was going to work well.
What kind of specific input did Diane give you when you were, you said she gave you a lot of notes about this, but what was it specifically? Was it just about how to make her character funny without seeming completely crazy or making it more crazy? Or what was her input into that aspect?
It was all sorts of things. You know, she was very specific in her notes. And this is a great thing when an actor will do that. She would go scene by scene and say, I don't think my character would say this line. Does it have to be done this way? Wouldn't it be funnier if? I don't feel comfortable with that. I'm not sure. I wouldn't do this. I don't feel like my character would do this. These were all just openings for discussion. She was not, you know, I absolutely won't do this. My character wouldn't do that. Take it out. It was, do you think that this really makes sense? Is this the best way to go? So a lot of it had to do with, and this was a really fascinating part of the process, she knew that she needed to play a character who was domineering, who was overbearing, who was controlling, who had certain images about what her daughter should be and shouldn't be, but she didn't want to be absolutely unreasonable about it. She wanted to make sure there was logic to what she did and how she treated her daughters. And she didn't want to really violate certain things that she felt were appropriate for this character to be doing or not. She didn't want to break things to make a joke, which I'm always in favor of. I think you make better jokes when you don't break logic for the joke, unless you're making a movie that's just about jokes.
Hi, I got a couple questions about the physical comedy mm-hmm. that Mandy Moore did. First, logistically, what's involved with getting a balloon to cooperate with her? And secondly, Mandy said that the snort laugh was kind of based on Sandra Bullock and Miss Congeniality, and I was thinking, Suzanne Somers and Three's Company?
Actually, the funny thing is that her character was written as having this laugh, this snorty laugh, and I said, let's make sure it isn't what Sandra Bullock did in Miss Congeniality, which I thought was really good, by the way, and also very memorable. So the challenge was, how can we find for Mandy her own kind of snorty laugh? And it took a bit of work. She had fun playing around. It was kind of funny to see her go from feeling like, well, I don't really know how to do this and I don't know what to do, to then like letting loose with all sorts of really bizarre kind of odd pieces of laughter. The balloon was a huge pain in the ass, so to speak. And it worked so much better than I thought it would. What we did, the trick is super simple. I thought, well, we're going to need to CGI a balloon in, and we're going to have to do all sorts of fancy stuff. But for the most part, it was a piece of monofilament pulling through her dress. There's a guy hidden out of frame, tugging this balloon at the right time, the right way, the right place, and a wind machine and all that sort of stuff. So, those things can take hours and hours, and we did okay. We did okay. We got the stuff fairly quickly.
Hi, that kind of ties into my question. How did you use costume design to support the comedy in the film? Because there's some wonderful outfits that especially Diane was wearing in the film.
Yeah, and that's also an area where Diane had a lot of input, and a lot of good input, because, she has her own sense of style and fashion. Shay Cunliffe, who's the costume designer, came in with a concept and talked to us and talked to me and Jesse first. And we went through a lot of choices and looked at a lot of photographs, that sort of thing. And then we narrowed it down, and somewhere in the mix, I think it was Shay who came up with the idea of these kind of 1950s big dresses, which Diane, I can't remember if she immediately embraced it or whether it took her a little while, but because she was really involved and she came in and she looked at a lot of choices and she would say, yes, no, I don't like this, I don't like that. And she did embrace this sort of 50s mom look. We all thought it was funny. I mean, we all thought that this was a really kind of odd way to portray a contemporary mother, because the costumes, they're not retro, but they're retro feeling, I guess. I mean, and so that was something we had a lot of fun with.
As a director, how do you approach the different genres that you're working on? Do you approach them differently?
Yeah, you have to. You know, it's funny. As a director, there are movies that you make because you're passionate about getting your vision across, and you know that your vision is different than anybody else's. And in those cases, you take the plunge and it works or it doesn't. But, you make the stylistic choices based on how you feel about the material. A movie like Because I Said So, which in many ways, and I'm very passionate about it, it's a romantic comedy. The people who go to see it are going to want to see a romantic comedy that delivers to them the kind of story that they expect. So for me as a director, I look at it and say, all right, how do I manage to satisfy people whose expectations need to be fulfilled and at the same time bring my own personality to it without having my personality destroy what the movie needs to be? Does that make any sense? And certainly in terms of director style, choice of camera angles, how it's shot, I feel like this is, anytime I do my work, I try to make choices that are appropriate to the material. So, and it's very, very tricky. Most people don't realize this. When you do a romantic comedy, you're most likely not going to be doing incredibly complex camera moves and really, radical angles and fast cuts and that sort of thing. It's almost as if, those things are liable to destroy the balance of comedy and emotion that's necessary in this movie. So I look, to choose ways to shoot that support the material.
Thank you.
There have been rumors about a possible Heather's sequel. I know Daniel Waters is doing something else right now, but what are your thoughts on that possibility?
I never really saw it as a realistic possibility. It's something that Winona talked about for years. She's always wanted to do it, and Dan and I kind of chuckle and say, well, you know, what would that really be? How do you make a sequel to a movie like that? There was a point at which we all talked about setting it in Washington, D.C. This was a while ago because, you know, we felt that that's a territory where people like that thrive. But I don't know. You know, Dan's movie, Winona's in Dan's movie. And so I've seen footage of it. I haven't seen the cut yet. I read the script. It's a really interesting piece. It should be really good. So that may revive interest in it. But I always feel like, you know, where do you go? I don't think just because a movie is good or people like it means you need to make a sequel to it.
Do you think the mother-daughter relationship in this movie relates to the mother-son relationship in your life in any way?
In some ways, you know, I have a very strong mother, that's for sure, and she has a lot of ideas, and I get along really well with her, and we're very close. But you know, I have two sisters, or I had two sisters. One isn't alive anymore, but there was the dynamic in my house with the mother-daughter stuff was, I think, more relevant than the mother-son relationship that I experienced. But it is, I definitely know what it's like to have a mother who has a really strong point of view.
Last question.
Was the laryngitis scene, was that already in there, or did Diane happen to come down with it beforehand? Because it sounded real. I mean, to me, it sounded like when she was losing her voice, it sounded like she was really losing her voice. And secondly, I want to ask you how difficult it was to get the girls to sing.
Okay. Well, the laryngitis scene was in the script, and it was always in the script, and I always thought it was probably the most interesting and strongest part of the movie, and really, you know, something that the movie, if it were done right, the movie would benefit from it in a big way. And what Diane did, which was interesting and kind of fun to watch, is when we shot the scene where the girls all sing together at her birthday party, and Diane blew her voice out. I mean, she did it deliberately, and she did it starting the day before, I think, and was basically, we had to shoot in such a way that we'd gotten everything done before she blew her voice out because it was going to go. And then she did, and you know, it was kind of the only way to do it. So that was all planned, you know, by her, and sort of carefully meted out in the shooting of that scene. And you know, we had pre-recorded the girls singing for that scene, and they're all good singers. The pre-record was great; it was really good. But my feeling was, I don't really want to use the pre-record. It's there just in case we need to bolster something, and you know, the technicalities of cutting together something where people sing, it always helps to have something for them to play to. And right now, it's their voices singing live, I think, probably, if not 100%, you know, 95%. And so Diane, in the singing, is already starting to, you know, we shot the scene where she loses her voice after that, but she was already starting to blow it out. So you can hear it in the singing there. And was there one more part of your question?
Were they all game to do the singing?
Oh, yeah. They were all game to do the singing. Mm-hmm. And it was always conceived as part of what the family does. And so I think it was one of the attractive elements of Mandy Moore coming in, because we knew she could sing well, and we knew that that would work. And Diane likes to sing. There was, you know, going back to the question about outtakes, Diane did sing a very beautiful version of the song Little Girl Blue, which was originally going to be part of the movie. And it was just a little bit too lugubrious, I thought, and didn't quite fit in. But she, you know, we have her singing that. She did a great job. So she really wanted to sing.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Wasn't this supposed to be a special edition of Hudson Hawk?
I don't know. Nobody ever tells me about that stuff. You know, I did the director's commentary for Hudson Hawk.
Yeah.
I remember they called me and they said, do you want to do the commentary? I said, well, is Bruce going to do it? Is Joel Silver going to do it? And they said, no. And I said, okay, I'll come up. No, I'll do it. And I flew down to L.A. and they put me in a room, and I hadn't even seen the movie in a few years, and I just talked. So it's impossible for me to gauge whether there's any interest in that movie.
No, it was on the schedule for July, and then it disappeared. mean, they had specs for it and everything.
Who knows? So, I'd love to see a special edition of that. I still, you know.
I remember seeing something so cool.
Yeah. Does anybody even want? I mean, does that movie have a life?
I have two things. I wanted to do a follow up on Hudson Hawk.
Yeah.
Basically, say that interesting thing. I was in Florence, staying in a hostel, and that movie was on every night in the TV room, and that's all anyone watched.
Really?
And here's my question: what that movie suffered, I think, when it first came out with this hype, and then it was sort of. To be honest, it was really bashed. And now it seems like it's really come alive with fans and people seem to really appreciate it. And what's your take on all that?
Well, you know, it's interesting because the release of that movie was really painful for me. I was a young filmmaker and I'd done Heathers and I was trying, and I chose to do Hudson Hawk because I thought I could really take that, what the action adventure genre at the time was, and completely fuck with it. And that was the idea. And we just got punished. You know, I mean, we got punished brutally. It almost completely ruined my career as a director. And I had to kind of walk around for a couple of years with my head down and suffer, you know, basically certain kind of humiliation, which I said, okay, well, we tried and we did this. I have no perspective on that movie. There was a lot of work that went into it and a lot of stuff that Dan Waters and I really wanted to put in there that made it through. So I'm really happy when people tell me, oh, I like the movie or the movie of his life. I go, oh, good, because it never got what it deserved when it came out, that's for sure.
People have realized how you were messing with the genre there.
Yeah, they didn't know that at the time. You know,
they absolutely didn't. It was supposed to be Die Hard 3.
Yeah.
They tried to sell it as that.
It shocked me, actually, that people looked at the movie and said, you know, gee, it's like an incompetent version of what we expected. I go, no, that's what we wanted to do.